these days.
Kids these days.
This is Kids These Days.
Today on Kids These Days, get on the bus because school is back in session. Summer vacation is over and the kids are back to the teachers and the books. And that means the whole family will be readjusting the routines of daily living. Do you struggle with adjusting sleeping and eating and homework schedules? Is it hard to get back in the mode of getting kids to and from school and to other activities? How about adjusting chore responsibilities or paying attention to your students' time management skills? Oh yeah, and family time. When does that happen? I'm talking with two women in the studio today who have good ideas for families who are managing these changes right now. Also this hour, adults recall their most lasting back-to-school memories and a new KTD on the go about exercising with the whole clan. That's all coming up this hour on Kids These Days. Hello, everyone. I'm Shanna Sheehy, host of Kids These Days. It's been a whole summer already, really, and kids are back to school right now all across the state. Maybe you're packing lunches for your kindergartner's first day or laying down the ground rules for your child driving himself to school this year. Or you're a teacher with a ready classroom or a parent who's sending your kid to college instead. Well, today's show is all about getting back into the school year routine and what that entails. If you have something to share about that, we want to hear from you. Post a comment through Facebook Connect directly on our website. You'll find a place and a space to do that at kidsthesedays.org. Check it out while we're talking here today. I'm joined for this conversation by two interesting Alaskans. Dr. Joan Bowman has been a school psychologist in the Anchorage School District since 1981. She's worked directly in the schools in a consulting role and in administration. She's a nationally certified school psychologist and is actively involved in the profession at a national level. She's also active in her community through volunteer work. Thank you, Joan, for being with us today on the program.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
And also with us is Karen Gordon. Karen is a kindergarten teacher at Northwood ABC Elementary. She knows a lot about the value of routines and going back to school for a few good reasons. She's also the mother of four children. Two are currently in high school, one recently graduated, and one's a UAF grad. Thanks to you, Karen, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Well, ladies, let's start the conversation today about getting back into the routines of school by talking about the value of schedules when it comes to raising children. Is it something that we should, as parents and as caregivers, be paying attention to? And why is it important if that's the case? And let me ask you first, Joan.
I think schedules and organization is essential. That when you're organized and you're prepared for the school day or for the events in your life, that you help eliminate a lot of the stressors that come with being unprepared. That if we create a schedule for getting ready to school, getting ready for school, you can just make those starts a lot smoother for children. So, as you said, kids are now back in school. Hopefully, parents have thought about the amount of sleep kids need and have already started adjusting that schedule. But if you haven't, it's not too late. Generally, it takes about 2 weeks for a child to adjust their sleep schedule, although some children adapt very quickly. But one of the things that we should look at is what time your child needs to go to bed, what time they need to get up in order to be ready for school. And we can talk a little bit later about rules of thumb for amount of sleep needed.
Yeah, and so sleep is one of the routines that I think is so important, you know, for any age child, and the amount of sleep that kids need differs depending on how old they are and so forth. Do you think most, let me ask this question of you, Karen, since you're a teacher and also a parent, how different might the average Alaska family summertime sleep routine be versus what it should be for the school year? Like, do people really get skewed in the summer, would you say?
They do totally, particularly now that I'm the parent of teenagers and I see their schedule gets totally on upside down time. And they're going to need to be getting up at 6 o'clock, 6:30 to be ready for high school.
And so what might upside down time be?
Oh, teenagers like to stay awake until 2-3 in the morning, even if you have them be in the house. They like to be up, and that just doesn't work during the school year. And they notoriously like to sleep. You know, their body clock tells them we want to sleep till 10, 11, 12, 1. It keeps going unless they have jobs that they need to get to. So teenagers, people that are out traveling, enjoying some sunshine, people in the villages particularly. I've been in a couple of villages where they get totally on upside down time and they're going sometimes to bed in the morning and up all night. So that's the up, they call it upside down time in the villages. So we really do have a big shift to make. And even little children, too. They
right.
do get.
And so what is a realistic time frame? We've obviously missed giving advice to people for, say, you know, 2 weeks in advance of school starting. But since this is the very beginning of the school mm-hmm. year, what can parents expect if they're really radically, in the case of a high school student, say, adjusting a sleep schedule that's totally upside down? You know, what's reasonable in terms of really making a shift in getting a kid who's sleeping in a more normal fashion?
Yeah. Let's start with talking about amount of sleep. And I think we underestimate how much sleep children do need. Young children, elementary age and earlier, need 10 to 12 hours of mm-hmm. sleep. So if you think about chaining backwards, what time do I have to be out the door? What time do I have to get up in order to be out the door at that time?
Right.
And what does that mean about going to bedtime? Now, with our long summer days, it's hard to put a child to bed at 7 p.m. You're probably just eating dinner about that time. But planning ahead for school, do that walk backwards and decide, you know, if they need this much sleep, this is what time you need to go to bed. For an older child, I think, unfortunately, you just have to start setting that alarm and early. Hopefully they've been doing that for themselves, but mm-hmm. waking up, you're going to be tireder at the end of the day if you stay awake and you don't let yourself take a nap. But high school is really hard because the biorhythms of teenagers mm-hmm. is different than what we do in high schools. And some states have, you know, adjusted some of those start times to take into account for that. But I mentioned little kids need 10 to 12 hours. Teenagers still need, you know, between 8.5 to 9.5 hours. And when you see a teenager sleep all day on the weekend, that's showing you that they're a bit sleep deprived. But some of the tips I've read is to encourage that teen to not sleep in until noon each weekend, because then they're resetting their body clock mm-hmm. one more time. So
right.
encouraging, you know, not a 6 a.m. wake-up call, but a reasonable wake-up time on the weekend so that Sunday night isn't such a hard adjustment would be a good idea, too.
Right, and then it's like readjusting every single week instead
right.
of just at the beginning of the school year.
Right.
Joan, in the case of a teenager, you say, you know, 8.5 to 9.5 hours is what would be considered mm-hmm. a good amount of sleep for a teen. If your teen at home is sleeping less than that, you know, and catching up on the weekends or maybe not really finding time to catch up, is there harm in that for a developing teenage brain to not be receiving the right amount of sleep?
There's a pretty good relationship between, I can't say it's a causation, but for people who aren't getting enough sleep, including children, you're more likely to be irritable.
Mm-hmm.
You're more likely to have trouble with concentration and focus. You're more likely to have trouble with short-term memory, so learning mm-hmm. that new material. So the implications are that you're more likely to be at risk in your academics and your learning and your social adjustment during the school day if you're cranky. I mean, think about the days that, you know, we've woken up on the wrong side of the bed and everything's irritating. We're not at our best. And so kids who are sleep deprived or adults who are sleep deprived aren't functioning at their optimal level.
And it sounds like that advice can also apply to any aged child, right? And I guess any aged person.
Any person, I think, yes.
Well, children that arrive at school tired, the things that they're learning the first part of the day just don't have that impact and they're not being retained.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it from my teenagers all the time who they're tired, and they'll recite the studies that they've read about how teenagers should be going to school later. They know the data.
They'll recite those studies, but they won't suggest that they go to bed earlier.
No, they just want the school district to adjust we want to go at 9. But also the little children, typically a lot of school programs have reading early in the morning, and we're getting right to that business of reading and the less important, highly things that take as much concentration we're teaching later in the day. But if they're tired and they're coming in, and we can get to the story about eating breakfast too, if they
Absolutely.
Haven't done that in the morning, it's hard. Things just aren't sticking, and
yeah.
so it really is important to get that sleep. And it's hard for me when I hear my children telling me about a TV show that they saw or some movie that they watched the night before, and television's another part of the equation,
yes.
But that I know they're not going to bed. So.
Well, before we finish our conversation about sleep, let's first hear something that we've had prepared in advance. As we know and have talked about just now, sleep is important for brain function, for any age, and for any part of brain development. And we've discussed for general pleasantness with children and adults, for that matter. And getting kids back on the right sleeping schedule after these long summer days, we've talked about it. It can be tough. So the enterprising teens at the Alaska Teen Media Institute think they may have found a solution for sleep problems within the family. So let's hear their funny take on this subject.
Lethargics. Have you been suffering from sleep deprivation? Have you always wanted to stay up that extra hour to watch your favorite television show? Well, I've got good news for you. Now there's Lethargics, the everyday supplement that supplies a full 8 hours of sleep and one small, convenient orange pill.
I've been taking Lethargics for a year now, and I haven't had to sleep one night since then! Yay! Lethargics is the greatest thing that ever happened to me! Thanks, Lethargics!
Lethargics is great. Lethargics is better than those other cheap competitors. You want Lethargics, and Lethargics wants you. Check us out on the web at www.neversleepagain.com.
Clever.
That fake advertisement was produced by Stephen Walsh, a former ATME producer. That piece comes to us from the ATME archives. Thank you, ATME. You can find out more about the Alaska Teen Media Institute and the work they're doing right now by clicking to their website from ours at kidsthesedays.org. I'm Shanna Sheehy. I'm speaking with Karen Gordon and Dr. Joan Bowman today on the program, where we're talking about getting back into the back-to-school routine. Kids are back to school this week, and we're discussing all the different adjustments that families have to make to help their kids be their best at school. We just talked about sleep. We just heard the teen media's take on, you know, how convenient would it be if we had that little orange pill, right? And before we listened to that ATME piece, we discussed, we kind of alluded to eating and eating schedules. And maybe, Joan, I can start by asking you a little bit about what you meant when you suggested that eating is a whole different story and a whole other thing that families have to get back on track with.
Well, I think in the days of summertime, we're pretty loose and easy. We eat when we're hungry. We might eat later than we normally do. Some kids aren't real big breakfast eaters, but there's clear predictive value of eating a good, nutritious breakfast and doing better at school. Some children go to the before school program. Their parents are up and out of the house pretty early for their own jobs, but packing some healthy snacks, packing something that your child will eat if they're not ready for a big breakfast, maybe some toast with peanut butter on it, maybe a little something to get that nutrition flowing in their body would be real important.
And Karen Gordon, as a kindergarten teacher, can you see, like, when a child comes to school, can you just know immediately if they've had no breakfast or a high sugar breakfast or something that you would consider nutritious?
A lot of those kind of kids come in pretty lethargic, and actually kindergartners will tell me, I'm hungry. And
oh, really?
The morning just, either their morning didn't go smoothly. There are a lot of families that don't have breakfast stocked in their home. There's mornings, you know, just everybody got ran out the door and that just didn't happen. All kinds of things go on. So my kids generally tell me that they're hungry, but you can see they're just kind of droopy. And if they're the quiet children, you go over and ask, did you have breakfast? No. And so I keep things like graham crackers stocked. Just doesn't take a lot to at least get something going. You know, we can't do essentially all the healthy items that are out there, but at least I can give them a small snack. And I think parents can think that way in the morning. At least there's something, if you have those bad mornings, to at least, you know, keep something that they can nibble on in the car on the way to school. And most schools will recognize that need to have something in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And I think parents can be creative. If your child doesn't like the breakfast foods, serve them a lunch food or make a little cheese crisp. Serve them something that they will eat or keep some of the better choices of granola bars on hand for your child to eat.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Not everybody likes breakfast-type foods. Lunch is fine. You know, eat that in the morning.
And the whole idea of there being an eating routine that's different in summertime compared with in a more structured school year. You know, school lunch is a big place where it's obvious because the kid is either bringing their lunch or having lunch served to them from a cafeteria setting versus being at home maybe and having it done differently. How important do you think is that routine and the predictability of how food comes to a child or how a child gets food? How important is that to the kid as they're growing up?
All routines are important. When a child's, the more predictable a child's life is, the more confident they are, the more secure they are, the more that they know that, that life has certain boundaries and certain routines. And it helps to predict to bedtime and homework time that if I come home and I have a snack, I have 30 minutes of playtime, and then I go to my homework area, and then dinner's at a certain time. Kids can have a sense of time passing. Even if they don't tell time on the clock, they know that there's a certain time that dinner arrives, there's a certain time that bedtime snack arrives, there's a certain time for bath time. So the more routines we build in, the better predictable life is and the more confident we get when we know what to expect out of life. So I think all of those routines, I know you're not ready to go there yet, but homework routines and bedtime routines and getting up routines and ways to make that smoother for families, we can maybe mention as this show goes by so that we can give some nice tips. But food is important and healthy food, and I just cringe walking through the cafeteria and seeing the kids with the candy bar, the bag of chips, a sugary drink, and then the sandwich goes in the trash. And it's like, oh, please. So, you know, maybe even involving from the kindergartner helping bag the veggies you've chopped up to the older children helping to make their own sandwiches. When we involve children in food preparation, whether it's at dinner or lunch or at breakfast, that's something they've made, and they're more likely to eat something that they've made and they've helped create. So there's little ways that we can massage that healthy eating for children as well.
And food is a source of security, too, knowing that it's coming, particularly children that are in families where food isn't always as ready available or all the sources of food are not consistently there. And we have families living very much on the edge, and some of those families we do have in our class, I've had in my classrooms. And so the food that they receive at school is very looked forward to, and the security of, say, breakfast, snack, lunch, and then having something at home. Food equals security.
Yeah. And it seems like the routine of foods within a family, we're talking about kids specifically as they go back to school, but like there's a routine that a parent or that the caretakers probably have to change a little bit too when, you know, they're picking kids up from school or meeting kids after school programs and then they come home from work and, oh my gosh, dinner. Let's get dinner on the table in time that kids can get to bed on time, right? So maybe I can ask each of you ladies for advice about that from the perspective of how can you prepare food in a way that makes sense as a parent or as a caregiver. But before we do that, I wanted to mention that when it comes to tips, our producer Sarah Gonzalez found at nasponline.org a whole list of wonderful tips for going back to school once school starts, once the first week is underway, tips for overcoming anxiety, tips for making extracurricular activities success, and other sorts of those kinds of things. And one of the things that they say when it comes to preparing for school starting, they say, why don't you as a parent make a few easy dinners and freeze them in advance so that those first couple days when everybody's transitioning, you come home and dinner isn't something else that you have to add to your list of things to do for the day. And I'll mention also that we will make this available to all of our Kids These Days listeners online at our website, kidsthesedays.org, and you can link easily to that website and this list. Any tips that you might add to that in terms of helping the parent be better prepared for food?
Well, as a parent of four children, that, as well as being a teacher, that was the prep step that I've had to be thinking about. One of the things is getting ready for school lunches. My children do not like to buy school lunch. They like to bring lunch from home. So it means just making sure you've made that run to the grocery store ahead of time, having easy to pack things. Of course, older children, as you were saying, you want them doing some of it themselves, having familiar things out. Part of that's over the summer, maybe teaching kids how to make things and building that skill. But making sandwiches, like I said, it doesn't have to be standard food, as long as it's something that they'll eat and they're comfortable with and it's reasonably healthy, mm-hmm. And easy to pack and will stay safe until lunchtime at school, you know, because we don't have refrigeration for most things.
Right.
And most children don't have a way to heat things at school. That's another possibility in some places. As far as getting ready, even breakfast and dinner, you know, breakfast, having things set out the night before so that it makes breakfast go quickly. And same with lunch. There's some staging that goes on depending on that I can do to help my children pack their own lunches. And to be honest, I still, with my high school kids, help quite a bit because I want a healthy lunch and some of them would prefer to sleep till the last minute. So I think just looking at what you value, getting things kind of ready and helping them get through that quickly. And then for dinners, we've done the make it easy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in this together. And because I'm teaching, I have a stay-at-home husband who works at home. And so he is our one that helps with dinner, preparing that most nights. But it should be enjoyable. What you want to do is be gathering back together as a family, that routine, and sharing. And so what's for dinner maybe is so much less important than being together at dinner
then
and being able to start sharing. You know, you want dinner, and I always want it to be not experimental, but something everybody likes to eat those first few nights so we can come together and enjoy. How did it go? What was your teacher like? Who were you with?
Mm-hmm.
And take advantage of the crock pot. You know, mm-hmm. put that together in the morning, and when you come home, dinner is ready, mm-hmm. you know, so.
And it smells so good when you walk in the door.
And it smells good, yeah, so. But involving children in, as Karen said, you know, you can put the fruit in the lunch bag the night before. You can chop up the veggies, put mm-hmm. them in a baggie with a little container of ranch dressing if that's what they need, and have those all refrigerated and ready just to drop in the bag. And then having part of your routine, you know where to look for things, as Karen mm-hmm. said. The cereal's already out. Little children can even set their own place. Here's my bowl. Here's my spoon for morning. Here's my clothes for morning. Mm-hmm. Here's my backpack. It always goes in the same place when I come home. It always goes in the same place when I'm done with my homework, so I don't have to be searching, running around the house. Where's the backpack?
Right. So. And that goes to that idea of routine.
Routine and organization.
That, yeah. Right. Well, this is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm speaking with Dr. Joan Bowman and Karen Gordon today about getting back into the school time routine with kids. And one comment we hear sometimes from listeners is that although they may not be parenting children at the moment, they still find the show relatable. We love to hear that because no matter what age you are or how many children you have, you were once a kid, of course. Here's another installment of When I Was Young, our opportunity to ask adults to remember back to their salad days. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez asked some South Central Alaskans what they remember about their first day back to school.
For me, the scariest thing was waking up on time, because in high school we had this class that started before the other classes. It was like a physiology class, and it was a really cool program where they had cadavers in the back room that you could, they would take out and we could, anyway, the problem was that we had to get up at 5 or 6 in the morning and go, and I was notoriously late. Like, what would wake me up was the honk from my carpool. Mm-hmm. And then I would get in huge trouble because then my mom would have to get up and then drive me, and she hated that.
Well, I remember departing one school and the teacher saying, well, Masonville's loss is Belvedere's gain. And I was looking forward to go to school at Belvedere. I was leaving, but that sticks in my mind. The teacher had confidence in me, so I was ready to go for the next year. That must have been second grade going into third.
So what's your strongest back-to-school memory from when you were a child?
When I was in grade school, my mom used to make my clothes, and she used to always insist on prints with pears and apples, and they'd be blue. And I used to just shudder at what she was going to unfold and make me wear the first day of school. So while it was wonderful she made her own clothes for me, I was always wondering how I was going to get teased that first day with what I had to wear.
Did you get teased?
Actually, not as much as I thought I was going to, because a lot of other kids were in the same boat. We used to always carry backpacks with us, and when we'd get to school, we'd change so none of us had to be mortified in front of everyone else.
First picture going to first grade, sweet jean jacket and brand new shoes.
What were your shoes?
I don't know. I just know I was faster because they're brand new.
My strongest memories about going to school, especially grammar school through middle school, was that I would look forward to my mom taking me out shopping. She'd buy all my school outfits for the whole year, right before we'd go back to school, and that was always a lot of fun, and I looked forward to that.
How did you pick the outfit that you'd wear on the first day of school?
Whoa.
That
was a big decision. I'd like to, well, we had to wear dresses back then. We couldn't wear pants. And so I remember one dress in particular. It was purple and with a dropped waist and a flared skirt, and it would twirl. So that's how I would choose it, if it would twirl and look pretty.
I would have to say it'd probably be back-to-school clothes shopping and just reconnecting with old friends that we've lost connection with over the summer.
What do you remember about going back to school?
I remember in first grade, my mom had gotten me a pair of brown suede Mary Janes with heart cutouts on the toes, and I hated them so much because I was kind of a tomboy. She thought they were going to be like, I was really going to win some new friends with these shoes, but I hated them so much that I went out at recess that first day, and I sat on my feet on the swing and just swung with my knees poking out because I didn't want anyone to see my shoes.
The first day in high school, I had moved from upstate New York to eastern Arkansas, and it was like moving back in time 30 years. And I walk onto campus the first day, and I have my pressed chinos and my shirts tucked in, and I have my backpack on, and I look around, and all I see is camo and Carhartts. And I'm thinking to myself, if I can make it through the first day, then I might have a chance. So I ran to the bathroom, and I untucked my shirt, and I untucked my T-shirt, and I sagged my khakis, and I threw my backpack over one shoulder. And I walked out onto the schoolyard, and in full prison mentality, just tried to make friends with the biggest person I could find. And so I walked over to this guy wearing Hunter Orange and camo, and the first words I'll never forget, he said to me, he looks over at me and he says, "Shot me a dog today." So I don't know if I made it or not, but I'm here today. So
my strongest feelings of returning back to school for a new year was the fresh kind of feeling and almost smell in the air of fall that I was entering into a new year starting from scratch, and I was really excited about getting new supplies and getting organized and always having the strongest will to keep things organized and neat for the rest of the year, even though they would likely fall apart.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That was great.
Voices collected by our producer, Sarah Gonzalez. What do you remember about your first day or days? Well, go to our website or Facebook page now and tell us your story. That's at kidsthesedays.org. Well, you're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. We're talking about transitioning today, transitioning back to the routines needed to support the school kids in your life. Make your voice heard online through kidsthesedays.org. You can comment there right now, and we love it when you do. We're taking a quick break now, but we'll be talking again with Joan Bowman and Karen Gordon in the second half of the hour. When we come back, we'll hear about the migrant ed programs across the state for kids who miss school because they're out fishing with family. And we'll get some active advice from our good friend Erin Kirkland and her KTD On the Go feature. Stay with us.
Spending my vacation in the summer sun, getting lots of action, having lots of fun. Saved my soul. The Board of Education took away
Next time on Kids These Days, the conversation is about starting a family and getting pregnant. We'll be talking about fertility and preconception care with Alaska experts. Plus, we'll explore the emotional side of readying one's home and relationship for a new bundle of joy. Also this hour, we'll learn about how the toxins in your environment can affect development and generational fertility. And we speak with an economist to find out how much it realistically costs to raise a child. That and more next time on Kids These Days. We're back. You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild, made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage, Alaska. Whether you're in Anchorage or elsewhere in the state, you can participate in the ongoing conversation we host about youth and family issues by going online to kidstheseDays.org. There, you'll find a way to chime in about today's show, as well as find a wealth of information on past topics. There's a year's worth of work there. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm joined by Karen Gordon and Dr. Joan Bowman, and we're talking about going back to school and that transition as it plays out in family life. We'll get back to that conversation in just a second. But first, as classes get underway at school districts around the state, some students won't be there. They may be away from their home district while their family participates in commercial or subsistence fishing. Under the Federal Migrant Education Program, students who move around for seasonal work like agriculture, logging, and fishing qualify for extra help when they do come to school, and over the summer, too. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
At the Anchorage School District's administration building, one student works at a table in the hallway. Lyle is taking an online economics course and has a tutor to help him. It's July, and when he finishes this class, he'll graduate from high school.
What are you going to do next?
I might go commercial fishing after this.
Where would you go?
Down in Kodiak.
Have you gone to Kodiak fishing before?
Yeah.
So you kind of come back and forth, Anchorage to Kodiak?
Yeah.
He qualifies for the Migrant Education Program because his family is involved in seasonal fishing work. The program pays for the tutor and provides a little extra help and motivation to graduate. In a pair of classrooms down the hall, students are earning extra English or science credits towards graduation. They do classroom work in the mornings. The writing class is studying Shel Silverstein's Where the Sidewalk Ends.
And here's where I think, you know, it gets into interpretation, and here I'm going to add my own little spin on this poem. Because when I think of kids...
In the afternoon, the two classes go on field trips together. One day they went fishing in Hope with a fishing pole, something some of these fishing family kids have never done. Sebastian wrote a poem about it.
Combat fishing with peers for fun, getting bites and catching fish. Some are lucky and some are not, fighting fleet or fight for fish. It has either been caught or lost.
They also write in journals and take turns updating the class blog.
We just write about like what we did that day or stuff like that, write poems and just try to do something creative.
The summer academies and summer school classes are just one of many ways Anchorage's migrant education program aims to help kids who move around seasonally, says Supervisor Leah Hathaway.
Well, there's a variety of ways of that people do their fishing. Some people who commercial fish will leave early or come back late or both. Some people who do subsistence fishing mainly do it this time of the year in July when the runs are in. And they can participate in parts and pieces of programs, and that's why our program is particularly effective for the fishing families, because we can hear about what their challenge might be and then try and offer services around that.
Kids also attend other summer camp programs at a very reduced cost. Year-round, there are math and reading enrichment nights for elementary school students, swimming lessons, and during the school year, Wednesday evening sessions to keep high school kids on track in their classes or help them make up credits if they come back to school late in the year. Counselors review transcripts to figure out what students need to graduate and how they'll get it done. There's a prep class for the high school graduation qualifying exam. Some students get one-on-one tutoring. A social services department gets families connected to help with housing, food, and health care. There are two migrant ed preschool programs for four-year-olds to make sure kids are ready for school. 3,200 students were enrolled in the program last year in Anchorage. In Fairbanks, the number is much smaller, 275, but there are still a range of services. At a recent back-to-school night, school supplies were distributed, and parents learned how to use the district's database to check on their children's progress in school. The district has two full-time tutors who travel to different schools to work with students one-on-one. Summer tutoring and summer camps are also available. Coordinator Louise Andrell says family nights are popular.
So twice a year, we host family nights
at the school district building for our migrant families, where we review and present our everyday math program. The students play math games with their parents. And then on our literacy night, we invite an Alaskan author who talks with the children about the importance of learning to read and learning to become a good writer and the skills that are necessary.
The state's total funding for migrant education programs is about $7 million. It's distributed to districts using a formula that factors in the number of students who qualify and participate, and whether there is a summer program, among other things. State Coordinator Josette McKeel says districts are free to use the funding however they think will best serve their students, though they do have a list of top priority students.
If they're in grades 3 through 12, they have to be either failing or at risk of failing an academic content area, and have had a school interruption based on a migrant move or a migrant-related activity. And then for grades K through 2, because there's no statewide assessments for those age children, it's based on district assessments that they use in the classroom.
If one of the goals of the migrant education programs is to keep students interested and engaged, it seems some are meeting that goal. A blog post a week after the end of Anchorage's Summer Writing Academy is titled Dang, and starts off, "I really miss this program already, chillin' in class, writing, taking pictures." I'm Jessica Cochran.
And I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm in the studio today for Kids These Days with Dr. Joan Bowman and Karen Gordon, and we're talking about going back to school. Let's talk about homework. We've mentioned it in the first half of the hour, but we didn't get into that in any great detail. And in Jessica's piece, we were, you know, talking about assignments and hearing about assignments through the migrant ed program. Where do we start with this? Karen, maybe you should take that away.
Well, it's a fact. It's coming. Get ready. Even in kindergarten, I send home little short homework assignments almost every night. So it's something that families need to prepare for, having a routine for how you're going to do it. And it's one of the things that I think a lot of kindergarten teachers, first grade teachers will talk about during the little profile time. They all are meeting with teachers before they go to school. And what I suggest is having just that regular time, starting right from the beginning of school, when that's going to happen. And it doesn't have to be the same across families. It's what works for you. Some families like the break after school. You know, you don't have to run right home, get that homework done, and get it finished. Maybe it's my own children like to have a break, and so maybe it was before dinner, maybe it was after dinner. It was the first thing you did after dinner, usually, is what our family did. But some kind of a set time, so you don't have to nag. And as they get older, that's the part they hate, is the nagging. So if you have that set time, you check in. If they've done it by then, you're great. As they get older, you know, homework takes longer and longer. And mm-hmm. now that I have high school students, you know, there's a lot more of a planning element involved of strategizing and how can you get everything done.
Right, which kind of leads into time management.
It
right?
is time management. Yeah. But having a time, having a place, you alluded earlier to where the backpack goes, a homework folder, whatever that is, having those regular routines and those regular places. At my house, we had four kids. We had four hooks. The four backpacks went on there. And if you didn't know where it, if it wasn't there, find it and put it there, kind of thing. And we had places to do homework. So that really did help. And those are the kind of things I pass on to the parents. Having a box of supplies that is your homework box. I start right off teaching my kindergarten families that. A little box that has the things you're going to need to do homework. Keep that sort of special so it doesn't get emptied.
And the place, like, can this be, you know, does it need to not be the kitchen table? Is that a bad place? Or is it really just dependent on how that family operates from the inside?
I'd say that's very, just each family. I have some children that like to do it in their room and my own family, and some that like the kitchen table. So that really, some like to lie on the floor, some like to sit in the bed. If they're doing a good job and their work is quality, you know, things, that's negotiable, I think.
I would agree that it's the routine mm-hmm. and knowing where to find things, like Karen said, and the supplies might change as you get older, but making sure that the children have their supplies, that they know what time to do it, they know where to do it. With our younger children, I think it's important for the parents to sit down, mm-hmm. review what the directions say, get your child started, and then back off. Let your child work right. independently. A rule of thumb is about 10 minutes per grade level. Right. So first graders should be doing about 10 minutes of work. Third graders, maybe 30 minutes.
What about
of
kindergartners?
Work.
Theirs is usually
a couple of minutes.
Okay. Yeah, it's very short. Yeah. It's just for our age, it's the routine of taking the folder home, having something to do, and bringing the folder back. Okay. That's really more the purpose.
And people sometimes question the function of homework, mm-hmm. and that's a bit controversial. Mm-hmm. I think one of the primary reasons for homework should be to reinforce the skills you've been learning. Right. So there's a little practice time. Very few of us learn something the first time. We practice driving mm-hmm. before we go for our test. We, you know, try out a recipe and try it out again. So part of it is reinforcing what you've just learned, and part of it is developing that responsibility mm-hmm. for yourself and that independence. So homework plays that role as well. So as Karen said, the backpack should have a place to go when you get home. Maybe some people put it, I love the idea of hooks. I thought about that as a tip, or they get by the door. Mm-hmm. And then the homework needs to go in the backpack.
Right.
And children who are carrying three-wing binders, I've advised that the unfinished work goes in the left pocket, and when you finish each page, it goes in the back of the notebook in the right pocket, mm-hmm. so that you're not scrambling, where's my homework sheet, where's my homework sheet? They're right in the back of the notebook. So those are some easy things to do. Oh, one thing I've said to parents who, you know, my child always forgets their homework, and I say forgets in quotes. Usually kids know, but I've advised, you know, if the child doesn't bring home homework, then you will have a little reading time, and then they will have to summarize it for you, either verbally or an older kid, write a little quick paragraph, or, you know, create some spelling words, have them do some math facts. That if I'm going to have to do some school-related homework, regardless of whether I bring my schoolwork home, it behooves me to bring my own homework done, and so that then it counts for something. But don't just give in to your child's, I forgot it. Be creative. Have them read a book. Have them read a magazine. Have them tell you about it so that they're still doing something mm-hmm. that's valuable in reinforcing learning.
And at the beginning of the school year, you know, the family is getting into mm-hmm. a new school year routine, but you're also, as a family and as a student, learning about this new classroom that you're in, the expectations of that teacher, you're probably getting a sense of what the homework load is going to be for that year. So if you're a parent or a caregiver of school-age kids and you have some sort of disagreement, maybe there's not as much homework as you think there should be coming in, maybe there's too much, in those first couple weeks, what should parents do if they do have a concern regarding homework? How should they address that?
Give it a little time. The first 2 weeks are very much a teacher kind of feeling it out. Usually they are giving guidelines, and they often send home a letter. A lot of schools have open houses, and they're going to be fully explaining what's coming. So don't jump on the teacher mm-hmm. right away that this isn't what we had last year with Mrs. So-and-so. Give it a little time. And then teachers are very accessible these days by email, and all the teachers will be ready to share that, and they appreciate that dialogue. So mm-hmm. if parents have questions, let them know or write a note, and they'll get back to you. As Joan said, you can offer a little more for your child. If you think it's too much, teachers are often very it's negotiable. If they want to know why does it seem like too much, mm-hmm. Is it hard for your children? Teachers are just starting to get to know each child, and so that's valuable information. And a lot of teachers, if your family has a certain schedule, and I don't know, we're going to talk about activities that sure. families get involved, but maybe, you know, Thursday nights are just a crazy night for your family. You know, let the teacher know that. And sometimes teachers are able to say, okay, we'll give you two nights. You know, teachers often negotiate.
And it sounds like that dialogue is mm-hmm. something that's really important.
It's huge.
I'd like to mention again that from our website at kidsthesedays.org, we'll be linking to a National Association of School Psychologists lists as part of their resources, part of their website that includes tips for parents for back-to-school transition. And in fact, some of the things that Karen and Joan both just said are on this list, including that dialogue idea. And in this list, it mentions that sending a note, you know, a handwritten note, or as you mentioned, Karen, an email, letting the teacher know that as a parent or caregiver, you're interested in having mm-hmm. open communication about the work that the child is doing in the class is very advisable to do at the beginning. Maybe not jumping on them, as you say, but just saying, hey, I'm available and I'd like to have these conversations.
And I think that is so valuable for the child as well, to see that their parent is engaged, that the parent is reading the messages that come home from the school. The parent can, if possible, go to those back-to-school nights or the parent-teacher conferences. that the parent is aware of what the child is learning and interested in what the child is learning. That gives the message to a student that schooling is important. And we're aware that some of our families are very economically stressed, and maybe they're working evenings and they can't come to those things. But they can still send an email, leave a voicemail that shows the child that your learning is important to me, and maybe I can't make every meeting, but I'm there with you as far as wanting you to excel. Children rise to our expectations, so mm-hmm. keeping that parent involved and having those conversations, I really highly recommend.
Well, Karen Gordon, let's talk about time management. You know, with the school year, there's the school work and so forth, but there's also the opportunity for school activities. I think mm-hmm. they become even more of something that people have to juggle as kids get right. older. Sport activities, other educational opportunities that happen after school. What is your advice to families out there who are maybe getting into this for the first time or really have involved kids and they're like, you know, overwhelmed maybe by some of the opportunities and what that means for driving kids around or those kinds of issues?
Well, let me start with the littler ones, since that's where I live with the kindergartners. And one of the things I tell families right at the beginning is this is not the month to start hockey or piano lessons or anything right at the beginning, particularly children who've never been in a long day program. Full day kindergarten wears them out. They tend to hold it together for their teacher during the day, and they get in the car and either fall asleep or cry. It can happen during that first month of school. It's a long day, and they're white. Then they
and
take
the day
a nap.
Is 7 hours. Is that how long it is?
School starts at 9, mm-hmm. officially, you know, 10 to 9, and they go home at 3:30. Okay. And then there's children that do after school kind of child care. It's a long day for a 5-year-old. And so just they learn it really quickly. By October, we are sailing. But that first month is very hard. So really, as a family, this is the time with the youngest children. I'd say first grade, you know, second grade, as they're getting back into that demand of a long day of paying attention and listening and having directions, you know, told to them all the time. This is the time to have relaxing time, go for a bike ride, and as long as the weather's nice, as it gets, you know, we can't do that anymore, go to the pool together. A relaxed thing, mm-hmm. if you can. Now, some children are already involved in some team sports, or, you know, they just love hockey, or their older siblings do it. And just keep it to a minimum. Don't layer one thing on top of another. But managing is about choices. And our children now, even at the high school end, they want to try everything. And we're having to talk about as the homework gets more demanding, you're going to have to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. So there is, you want family time, you want sleep. And at one point you were saying you've got to kind of go backward. When do you need to go to bed? And
right.
there's the when do you get home? And there's the when you have family time. And really realistically look at it. It doesn't really matter what your neighbor or your friend's child is doing. What can our family manage? And I think that also you have to take into account how many children you have, what different stages they're at. If you have 4 children, you can't be going in 6 directions. You know, you have 1 or 2 parents. Really sit down and look at it and what would benefit your family.
And Dr. Joan Bowman, are there risks to becoming, I shouldn't say risks, are there, you know, more than the obvious problems with becoming overscheduled as a family?
I think there are, and I think parents tend to take on this responsibility and kind of guilty feeling. There are so many opportunities, and we want our children to be able to take advantage of them, and we want them to be well-rounded. And I think it's all right for parents to say, you know what? For us to have family time, you each get to pick one extracurricular activity. Or maybe, you know, right now we can't afford the extracurricular activity, mm-hmm. but we can do puzzles together, we can play games together, we can have family game night, that not all enrichment comes from outside extracurricular activities. And it's okay to say no to your child. Mm-hmm. It's okay to limit those things.
And maybe as a parent, it's okay to say no to the endless number of possibilities you might
right.
think you need to give your kid.
And I think we overschedule children, and they need time just to play, just to imagine. A lot of learning goes on through play, how to negotiate with a friend, how to win, how mm-hmm. to lose, how to make choices. When we have always got something ready-made and structured for children, when that ends, they don't know how to fill their time. So I think there's a huge value to just being you and learning who you are, and it's okay not to try everything. We live a really long time. We believe in lifelong learning, so you can wait to take those piano lessons till you're 25 if you want to. You know, we don't have to squish it all in between age 6 and 16.
Mm, I agree.
Well, ladies, in the time that we have left for this discussion, can we talk about the emotional side of going back to school? We've talked about a lot of the practical things and touched a little bit on the emotions when you're talking about Karen kindergartners mm-hmm. kind of falling apart after school for the first month. But they're not the only ones who are having an emotional and social and, you know, psychological adjustment right. to a different way of being and being back to school. You know, what are kids dealing with? For those of us who can't read the minds of our children or don't have children, you know, what are some of the stressors that are happening specifically at this time of year?
We can see a lot of anxiety. One, just over the change of schedule. As we heard the one clip earlier, you know, I worry about getting up. I worry about the alarm clock. I'm always late. So there's the stressors just surrounding the routine is changing. It's not summer anymore. Some children get anxious about, you know, finding their way through the mm-hmm. school. I remember when I was going to high school and had to navigate this large campus. So my older sister took me to the campus and we mapped out where my classes would be and I practiced walking mm-hmm. them. And, you know, we practiced opening a locker and timing how long will it take me to get to my locker and walk to the next class because it was a large outdoor campus. So you can do a little practice things to find out what is it your child is worried about and listen. Listen to them, hear their concerns. Don't try to be the fix-it person right away. See what they can come up in the way of a solution and identify what that anxiety is. If it's social anxiety, let the teacher know. They can assign a buddy, a lunchroom buddy, a playground buddy to help that child get a start. Some children get very worried about tests and you'll see I don't want to go to school today, and you can start connecting it to the Friday, you know, quizzes that teachers often do. And so helping them be prepared or helping them deal with that anxiety, whether it takes some little relaxation exercises or just a conversation. So kids get anxious about a lot of reasons, and so do parents. They get mm-hmm. anxious about their kids going off and are they going to have a successful year. Mm-hmm. So just be tuned in to what signs you're seeing in your child. Have a conversation with them. If, you know, you need to have a conversation with their teacher or the school psychologist or school counselor that's at the school and come up with a little plan to help bridge that little worry that's going on there.
I think, too, Karen, you can kind of share. Boy, I remember when school was starting, I used to always worry about whatever. I mean, I always have the dream of not being there on time for my kindergartners or whatever, and sort of started off with sharing something about yourself. And
oh, wait, are you saying that you, as a teacher, have anxiety dreams about your first day of school?
Almost every teacher has crazy dreams that, you know, things that happen and then you show up and the kids are already there. But we won't get all those. But I think as a parent or as a teacher, you can kind of share, wow, school's, I remember, and it sort of lays it out there. And so sometimes your kids will play off of that. And they do worry about the craziest little things of not knowing where the bathroom is. If it's a new school, you know, what happens if I get sick? Or what happens if this, you know, they have a lot of what if, and that they're not telling you, and you might have to dig a little. But so it's okay to ask. And then if a parent does find out, please let us know at school, because we often can walk somebody through something, whether they're 5 or 15. Often we can walk someone through something, and we can respect their dignity. They're a little older, and they may not like the idea that mom let the teacher know. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to. I've done that with my own children. The teachers want to know how to help you.
And do the anxieties change a lot from a kindergartner to a 12th grader?
I think the older children, there are a lot is it about friends. Who's going to be in my classes? You know, the kids are emailing each other their schedules and frustrated when they don't have their friends in their class, and they're wondering who they're going to be grouped with, you know, how other people are going to perceive them, as well as, is my teacher going to be someone I like listening to? You know, am I going to do well? You know,
their homework, is she going
to get? They're starting to worry about that. Whereas the younger ones are just, you know, am I going to get lost? Yeah. What's the expectation going to be? Will my teacher like me? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be a teacher who I get along with?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you ladies for being with me today on the program. It's been a pleasure to be speaking with you. Dr. Joan Bowman is a school psychologist working in the Anchorage School District. She is the former director of professional standards for the National Association of School psychologists. Let me try that again. She is a school psychologist working in the Anchorage School District. She is the former director of professional standards for the National Association of School Psychologists and currently serves as a volunteer leader. Thanks so much for being here, Joan.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And also Karen Gordon. She's a kindergarten teacher at Northwood ABC Elementary, and the mother of four children. Thanks so much to you for being with us as well.
I enjoyed it.
If you need to hear any of this program again, you can do so easily by streaming it from our website or by signing up for our weekly program podcasts. That's all at kidsthesedays.org. And also, just like every week, it's super easy to link to any or all of the studies and resources we mentioned on today's show there as well. Regularly on Kids These Days, we hear advice from Aaron Kirkland about family travel and recreation. In today's installment of KTD On The Go, Aaron is amped up for the Bonnie Sosa Tuesday night races, a great and easy way for the whole family to burn off a few calories and get some fresh air.
Fall is creeping up on Anchorage, and that means it's almost time for Tuesday night races. And I can't wait. I remember our first race. Raindrops spattered fitfully upon the ground as my husband's son and I picked our way across a soggy soccer field to the equally damp registration table. Kids mingled on the playground, bullhorns blared instruction, and parents called greetings from behind strollers. And everywhere, runners of all sizes, shapes, and skill levels show just why the Tuesday night races are truly a must-do event in Anchorage. Part of the Healthy Future series, Tuesday night races are more than just an opportunity to run at several different locations each week. They are about parents, kids, friends, and competitors all leveled on the same track from the word go. Anchorage Parks and Rec has this down. Split up ability levels to meet the needs of every genre, Munchkin Division for the young and young at heart, Farm League for the majority, and Lightning League for the hardcore. A sense of mystery precedes these weekly races. Only at the start do participants know where and how long they will run. Following flapping surveyor tape and sagging paper plates labeled with this way or that way, depending upon the division. It's sort of like a combination of tag and a scavenger hunt, and participants eat it up. Rain, wind, who cares? We're racing. And there's a certain laissez-faire attitude present in everyone when they cross that finish line covered in mud and sweat and an ear-to-ear grin. Yeah, this is Alaska running. Our son, now 6, has joined the Tuesday night party since he could toddle the trail on unsteady legs. Now a bona fide member of the Munchkin contingent, he's anxious to earn the right to dash into the finish chute all by himself. Tuesday night races have grown so popular that some nights I'd swear the entire city has turned out to run, walk, or jog their way to a healthy living, just as Healthy Futures founder Bonnie Sosa would have wanted it. Funny how something so simple could garner so much support. Gather a bunch of people together, take away competition yet provide the motivation, and stand back. I think about that every time my son crosses that hokey tape-swagged finish line, soaking wet with shoes untied, grasping not for a medal, but for a granola bar and high five from the volunteers who make the races a reality. That's family fitness. Nor rain, nor sleet, nor gloom of night. Tuesday nights are treasured nights. For Kids These Days, I'm the Farm League's own, Aaron Kirkland.
The Tuesday night races start on September 7th. For more information, come over to kidsthesedays.org and we'll connect you to what you need to know. That's it for Kids These Days today. Thanks again to our guests, Karen Gordon and Dr. Joan Bowman. Kids These Days is produced by Sarah Gonzalez, who also writes, edits, and manages and maintains all that you find at kidsthesedays.org. Jessica Cochran is our assistant producer, technical editor, and our regular contributor. Stephen Walsh and the Alaska Teen Media Institute helped today, as did AK On The Go's Aaron Kirkland. Our theme music is composed and performed by Lost Lander. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks so much for being with me today, and we'll see you again here next week.
The ID
ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.